This is Edge Cases, a podcast about the grumpier side of software development, mostly, but not always, Apple-related, featuring myself and my co-host, the Smokey and the Bandit of Objective-C. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Will French.
This is episode 51. It's Saturday, May 25th, 2013. And what's our topic this week, Wolf?
I guess it will be logging follow-up.
I'm sorry, logging?
What? You were just waiting for this, weren't you?
Flogging? Slogging? Oh, clogging?
Oh, yes, clogging. Yes.
Clogging, okay.
River dance, was that it?
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have some feedback?
Yes? Yeah, a brief bit of follow-up. So I got a tweet from Eloy. I guess he didn't actually tell me how to pronounce his name, but I just keep on butchering things as I go, which seems to be the disease of a self-taught learner people. I don't know, at least computer people. But he, interesting tweet in relation to CocoaPods, which is the latest version, 0.20.x or whatever it is, release includes experimental sandbox feature, where when you go to install a CocoaPod, or I guess that's a pod, that it actually, you can do it inside a sandbox, and that is actually using the Mac OS X sandboxing. So that's interesting. I don't know if this actually covers the run script build phase type stuff. I suspect it does, but it just might be the stuff that's required for when you actually go to install it. I think it has to do like a Ruby, or like, yeah, it basically has to eval a Ruby script in order to figure out stuff, and that you could obviously do code injection there. So I don't think it's 100% coverage. I wasn't altogether clear, but it's very interesting. I think it's I could definitely see CocoaPods getting to a point where it's more safe to use it, where it like tries to build things in sandboxes than just using like raw Git submodules or something like that.
Well, now does this mean that it's support for installing the modules that you're going to use in your application while being in a sandbox on that development Macintosh?
I believe so.
So they don't mean like supporting sandbox enabled applications.
Right. That's okay. Yes. It's a tool for when you go to install, not for supporting sandboxing per se in your app, which shouldn't, issue should be separate from CocoaPods pretty much altogether, because really it's just code library stuff.
Sure. Okay.
And so that's pretty much it, at least what I want to talk about this weekend. So I think we can, unless you have any follow-up of your own.
No, that's it.
Okay, then we can go right into logging. And so do you remember like when in last episode you talked about the Apple System Log or ASL, and do you actually remember using console.app in 10.5?
I'm sure I did. Let's see. I'm sure I did. What in specifically?
I believe that was the first version that where they basically switched. I think they introduced ASL in that version of Mac OS X. And I believe console.app was revved to support it. And the bad thing, at that time, I was doing kernel extension development. And also, I was, I think there's also this command line tool called Logger that you can use to invoke, like if you have a script that you want to actually invoke ASL and like log something to console, you can use that tool and you can set different levels and stuff like that. And look at the man page for that if you're interested. And it was just so like the latency involved where you would log something and whether or not it would actually show up in console.app was maddening to the point of unusability. I've never seen anything like it. Like sometimes it was totally unpredictable that you could. Sometimes things would show up immediately, and of course, when you're debugging, you're putting logging statements everywhere. It's like you're trying to figure whether you're getting to this code point, what the values are, and you're kind of in a mystery mode there because you're trying to figure out what's going on. And so if a logging statement doesn't show up, you're saying, oh wow, this code path hasn't been hit at all. And it wasn't just like, oh, I didn't wait the 2 seconds for it to show up. Like, it would literally be 4 minutes later it would show up. I don't know what subsystem could possibly introduce a latency that bad.
Seriously.
But it screwed me so badly that I'm like, ASL is a devil. I want nothing to do with it. I stayed away from it. It was god awful. I believe 10.6 had similar troubles. It was enough where maybe I was so badly burned by 10.5's release that I just wrote it off totally and stayed the hell away. But yeah, so I wondered if you actually ran into it yourself. It sounds like you didn't mess with it, or for some reason, maybe for some reason, I was just personally being affected. But it was really, really bad.
Well, I mean, the time that I was using it, let me see, was that, I mean, that was a number of years ago. I don't remember if it was 10.5 or not. And I don't remember that sort of latency, although I was also not doing a huge amount of logging. But no, I don't remember that sort of latency. And, you know, what would cause that? Like, that's got to be something, you know, really bottled up in some sort of subsystem. But you say that it was late, but it still got through.
It would get through. But like I said, it was totally unpredictable. It could be a latency of 2 seconds. It could be a latency of 3 minutes.
Well, it does seem to follow Apple's pattern in a lot of ways, that they push something out, you know, as rapidly as they can. And it's often very buggy and very bad. And yeah, like, you know, they might say later, oh yeah, we fixed it. We got it working. But yeah, if you've been burned, then that doesn't help you any. Mm-hmm. So you didn't necessarily remember that last week?
Oh, I actually brought up the pain directly, but I didn't. Yeah, I think that was like a 40-some minute episode. Right. I didn't want to add more fuel to the fire that was already burning pretty bright.
So my problems with ASL are more conceptual, but your problems are experience-based.
Right, yeah. So that was definitely that type of implementation issue. And that said, I actually, while you were talking about ASL in the last episode, I fired off a logger command, and I tried to reproduce the problem that I was seeing. And I'm on 10.8 machine here, and I was not able to reproduce it. Mm-hmm. So it seems that has finally been fixed. So yay.
True.
So now it makes me want to reread Peter Hosey's article that of all the stuff that I actually could be usable now. There you go.
Yep.
Okay. One thing you mentioned in the previous episode was how logging is like graffiti.
Yeah, that was my analogy, sure.
Which is interesting because I have another analogy, which I purposely didn't bring up because I didn't want to steal your show. But I view logging statements, in particular commented out logs, as scar tissue. So in the process of development, you're like operating on the code, you're doing changes. But, you know, when a person comes out of surgery, they have some pretty nasty scars on them, depending on whatever you can do with medical technology to try to eliminate those or minimize them. But for me, it's like, I used to, like in the early days, like when I would have printups in there or whatever, and then I would figure something out and I would delete them. And the code would look pristine. And a very long time ago, I've basically stopped doing that. There's obviously excess in both ways, but I find it's a lot helpful just to actually leave those statements in, but have them commented out. And it's definitely a double-edged sword here. But it's, for me, it's like when I see a method or a function that has a bunch of commented out debugging statements in there, that tells me that, you know, this is a contentious piece of code. This is potentially too clever or this is tricky.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, basically dragons lie here. What was it? Dragons here be here or something?
Here be dragons.
Here be dragons. Thank you. And so it's very much a warning sign when I see a bunch of commented out stuff. And it's funny because, like, it's so often that I'll try, you know, I'll go and, oh, I have to fix this bug in this app. And I'll narrow it down to a method. And what do you know? There's a bunch of debugging statements there waiting to be lit up. I just have to uncomment them because guess what? This tricky thing is breaking somehow. And so it's like, I'm obviously looking at the right place because this thing has already been through a battle.
Well, did I talk last time around? I don't think I did. That I've been on the other side of that, in that I've had to maintain code where they didn't comment them out.
Mm-hmm.
And they just left them in so that all of that logging for the sake of debugging the functionality of a method or class, they just left it in and it just stunk up the log.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there have been applications where I just, you know, rip it out because it makes things much harder to, when you add your own logging, you know, you've got to sort of parse your way through everybody else's logging to get to your stuff. And so for a while there, I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't, you know, maybe I shouldn't touch it. Maybe it's important for something. But nowadays, I'm just like, nope, take it all out. Especially because with the X4 UI, it is smart enough to only show the debugger panel if there is logging.
Hmm.
But once, you know, once anything logs to it, then it's going to pop up and take up space on your Xcode 4 main window.
Okay.
So the longer you can delay that, I think the better.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Okay. Then you also mentioned in the previous episode that you're anti-levels. So the entire thing, like where I want to say this started in Log4j, but I'm pretty now that I think about it, I'm pretty sure it started before that, where when you go to log something, you have a so-called level attached to it, whether like it be a debug, info, error, that type of stuff.
You think that predated ASL? Or
I think it predates even Log4j, which is where I first ran into it.
Oh, sure. The concept of it, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, even like syslog, I think, has different levels there. So that's really ancient. So, but you sounded like that you're pretty much against the idea of levels altogether. And I was pretty much on your page because I was thinking like, yeah, you know, what am I doing, you know, with all these levels thing? And then I went to think about it, and I have to say, I think I'm pro level.
Oh man.
So I believe in putting in logging statements and commenting them out and leaving them in there and the commits, and it looks like I'm also pro-level. So I think we finally have 51 episodes or whatever this is?
Oh, we've had disagreements before this.
Oh, okay.
Well, why are you pro-level?
I'm pro-level because probably for the ability to filter them out, and because I tend to put a good number of debug statements. Well, not good. When I run into trouble, I put it in debug statements. And the fact that then I can basically leave them in shipping code, but then make them so that they're no ops, that's powerful for me. And if you don't have levels, you can't really separate those two.
Well, right. So for me, you definitely need at least debug log and what I call error log, in the sense that they're the two log statements where one will get turned into a no op if it's a release build. Mm-hmm. And one will stay in a release build. And I like having something which isn't NSLog just because it shows that I'm more deliberate about it. Mm-hmm. Because just leaving it in NSLog could be a mistake.
Okay.
It feels like a code smell to me. Mm. But you know, the things where you say, okay, this should be in the release build and this should not. So definitely the things you put in for the sake of just debugging something mm-hmm. should always, you know, I would always put them as debug log, even if you're just committing them and meaning to remove them later. Because at least then, if you do erroneously ship with them, then they're no op. But I what I was having trouble with was finding useful cases with more than those two levels. Why would you need a third level then? What's good about it? What does it help you with?
Yeah. So I believe Log4j, where I picked up a lot of this stuff, has I want to say like 6 or 7 levels or something like that, but it's like debug, info, warn, error, and then fatal. Some other systems I've seen puts an assert between error and fatal. So debug, I think we're pretty much agreed on that. We both can see the reasoning why you'd have debug stuff and why you want to strip those out. The difference between info and warn is, I would say it's a bit kind of fine-grained type stuff. I guess it's hard to talk about this kind of in the abstract instead I'd like to talk about it in terms of examples. Mm-hmm. For me, an info type stuff would be where it's like I'm connecting to this web server now, and maybe a warning would be like, oh, I hit a timeout now, but the second one worked. And so the info is still a lot more chatty, like I'm making this connection to this thing now, and that's something that's pretty it's not to the point where it's debug, where it'd be like the variable, this is the variable's value. It's like I'm this app. I'm doing this thing, but it's so routine and so common that you pretty much you usually actually filter that stuff out anyway. But if you're like hitting timeouts, stuff like that, it's still not an error because it's without an operating spec. But it's definitely something I would like to see logged.
Absolutely. So I think okay. What happens though is that you add those things in when you're seeing problems. Mm-hmm. Right. When the only reason you'd ship something like that, if you say, well, I want that extra information for the sake of, you know, problem one, problem X. And so therefore you put it in for a very specific reason. You don't put it in for the heck of it. You don't put it in to clutter up a user's logs just because you feel like you might need it someday. Right. That's really the problem that I see. So if you need that for a particular problem, great, throw it in. give it a level if you want, give it a name if you want, mm-hmm. but it's there for a specific reason. If you do find that you've solved that problem, then you rip it back out because you don't need it anymore. What I have a problem with is that, you know, throwing everything in the kitchen sink in there. Oh, hey, there are these seven levels. Pick whichever levels you want for the thing that you need. Well, okay, what's this kind of info this time around? And maybe there's other stuff and other stuff. Well, no. What you need to debug that problem is one extra level. That's it. You don't need a giant list. And if you do have a giant list, if you and a couple other people are working on this code, maybe you all have slightly different ideas about what those levels mean. Maybe you add stuff in at a whole bunch of different levels because you didn't really discuss it and whatever. Whenever you start maintaining something with a larger group, you need to worry about these chances for things to get to overflow their bounds and become something unmanageable. And so for me, again, I would not introduce levels until you absolutely need them. And then once you need them, use something. But again, don't rely on a giant system which you have no need for. That's okay. All.
Well, I'm definitely on your side with your latter point, in terms of this, like, getting developers to use the same tools in the same way and kind of get on the same page on how to do things. That's the problem. And you're right that whenever you introduce this a complexity or a methodology or a tool, is this getting people to all kind of see the same way? It's probably impossible. You know, it's hard enough just to get people to think that the same, like, basically assign the same definitions and the same words, let alone, you know, realize that in this scenario I should be doing this the way that my team is doing. To get a coherent team view is very problematic. So I'm definitely with you there. But I think you actually made my point for me in your first point.
No,
where you're like saying, you know, put it in to figure this stuff out. Then once you figure this stuff out, take it out. And I told, you know, and like I said, I used to remove all my logging statements all the time, way back when. I think your problem is that your logging system isn't advanced enough, that you're using printf or using nslog, and that's a very binary thing. And, you know, you might be breaking out a macro for debug builds or whatever. But what I've been doing for, I guess since 2006 now, is that I've been leaving even my debug logging statements in all my shipping apps. And I have the ability to turn those on at runtime. For specific users that have my app that are having problems, I can actually turn it on at the class level, saying, I'm interested in the logging statement from this particular class. And that's even something that's easy for the users to invoke, where when they launch the app, they can, like, hold on a command key or whatever, and a console window for that app will show up, and it will do fine-grained logging for me. So what do you think of that? Throwing technology at the problem.
Well, certainly, and I've actually just been dealing with some of this stuff recently. Certainly, you know, I was looking at...
Cocoa Lumberjack?
Lumberjack, I'm sorry, did you just
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, I said Cocoa Lumberjack.
Yes. So that's when I was looking through this, I was seeing that it has those capabilities. I've been talking with some coworkers recently about adding this sort of functionality. And yes, I can see that as being useful, although you're going to have a fairly tech savvy, customer base if you expect them to, you know, basically turn on logging for particular classes in some sort of terminal window.
Well, right.
For them?
Yeah, so practically what I've discovered is that I will use the ability in a debug scenario to turn on logging, because I'll be running production builds on my app, and I'll see something that's odd, right? And then I will enable logging at runtime for that particular class that I know exists. And you're right, that's too much to ask for the users. That's why usually what I have is that if you launch the app, hold the command key down, or option key, or some other programmer defined modifier, that it will pop open a login window. And I think then it will spray everything. And it is incredibly wordy, but at that point, you're just trying to get the fine grained information out of the user. And you're right, asking them to name classes is really more than you can expect to ask. But the very wordy logs, that's reasonable.
Right. So if you found that it's useful, again, but all you're talking about is two levels.
Then, that's true.
And I do think, while it's true that you could give yourself more flexibility than that, it's not necessarily whether the technology can do it. I'm more worried about our fragile human minds, because if you give yourself all of that power and then you don't use it, or then you it's too complex to use, it's too hard to keep it all straight, what's turned on and what's turned off and blah, blah, blah. Again, no, just don't do something that you're going to have a hard time maintaining. Sure, if you, I can see what you're saying, although you'd have to convince me that the scenario, that the chance to get useful information from that is high before I'd be willing to put that into my application. Because leaving a whole bunch of debug log statements in there, the trouble with that is, okay, so then now you need maybe three levels, right? Because I don't want that stuff in my debug log either, as I was just saying. I want my debug log to be clean and only to have the stuff in it that I need to do my current level debugging, whereas what you're kind of talking about is a fairly massive application-wide series of log statements that kind of tell you about everything that's going on and a lot of details about what's going on throughout the application. I don't want that thing on all the time. If that, you know, again, that's exactly the kind of thing I ripped out recently in some of my work applications. So you'd have to say, well, here's the level which says, give me all of that information for someone else. Okay, here's the level of the debug statements that I'm just adding in now for the sake of debugging my application. And then here's what would normally happen in a release build. And you know what, again, those are the three levels you think you need. Great. On the other hand, you might spend years and years adding fine-grained logging to all the little details of what's happening in your application and never use it. And now you've got a massive amount of extra code in your application that's just hard to look at, hard to work around, and hard to maintain when you change things. Again, you'd have to convince me that that's needed before I'd be willing to put the effort into that.
Okay, so a couple points here. First, with the kind of the spray and pray of like kind of lashes, the last ditch scenario where the user is having problems and try to figure out what's going on.
Yep.
That is a very specific case. That's, you have a user in the field that you want them to do this very simple thing. They can launch the app with the modifier down, and then they can send you the resulting text. That is only really for the users. That's in development, I never do that. Instead, what I do is that when I well, I'll talk about this a little bit later, but I obviously have structured this talk incorrectly, that I should have talked to you about like the three logging systems I want to talk to first, and then we could have talked about this. But anyway, let's
Postpone the rest of this until after you go through that.
We could use the power of logic. I mean the audio software, not actual Vulkan logic, to rearrange our talk, but that's actually a lot of effort, so we won't do that. But I will say that I do start with initially my apps have full debug on, and then basically I'm like, and because it's easy, right? Because you have only one class, and then you have a few classes, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, this is way too chatty. And then basically you flip the switch and you invert it and you say, okay, everything shut up except for this one class I'm working on. And if you're using an advanced logging system, that's actually really easy. And that's how I spend the majority of my time using these logging systems, is that everything's trying to log all the time, but everything is shut up. And only the stuff I'm actively working on may be logging.
Okay.
The second part, if I can remember, what was your second part?
Did you say what you were going to do?
Yeah, what was your second part you were talking about?
Oh, I don't remember either. Why don't you just go on with what you were going to talk about? And we'll,
okay, because you had a good point there, but unfortunately I got derailed. Let's see if I can remember it later.
Sure.
But I kind of knew that you were going to be talking about Cocoa Lumberjack, because that's really, I would say it's probably the premier logging system currently for Cocoa programmers. And I've taken a look at it. It seems really great. But I want to kind of give you a backgrounder on these logging systems. I already mentioned Log4j. I know you have that web objects background, which I think was even the Java days. So do you have any familiarity with Log4j?
I have not heard of it, no.
Okay. Yeah, it's kind of the granddaddy of Java logging systems, and I'm pretty sure it's like based on something else, whatever. But it's a really decent system. My main gripe with it is that by default, it wouldn't log anything. And which is like, it was always kind of tedious to like, you add the jar to your app or whatever, and you turn on, and then you have all these log commands that don't do anything until you then go through the next step where you have to configure the logger to actually output something. And it seems to me like the default thing it should be that it actually logs. So Bob Frank, who's Chicago Bob on Twitter, back in 2002, he was programming web objects, and he was playing with Coco, and he's like, you know, I really want something like Log4j for Coco apps. So he basically ported Log4j to Coco, and he called it Log4Coco. And there's a SourceForge project that has it. And it's pretty much a direct port of Log4j. It has multiple classes all interacting, and has kind of the complexity that Log4j has, including all those multiple levels that I know you just super love. And it was good. And I think I even might have helped him with it a little bit or something like that. But I kept on trying to use it in projects. I use it here and there, but it was basically a pain to integrate because back then, kids, we didn't have things like CocoaPods that make it easy to drop open source projects into our Xcode projects, or I guess back then it was PBX projects, that it was a big pain. You have to like build this dot framework and you have to integrate it. And I tend to create a lot of small apps and a lot of small projects as I'm exploring stuff. So that's the mechanical difficulty of like integrating this framework into every little app I wanted to try out was just, the overhead was really, really too much. And I did a bunch of stuff that I didn't need. And I also had some other designs. So back in 2006, I wrote a package called JRLog. Basically, when I got fed up of NSLog, I ended up not using Log4Coco because it was kind of too heavyweight, but I really wanted its features. And I ended up using NSLog everywhere, even though it pissed me off every time I used it. So I ended up writing JRLog. And JRLog has a bunch of pretty cool stuff in it, but I never really call attention to it. In fact, if you go and look at its look at its repository on GitHub, that there's not even a README on there. So I've never really called too much attention to it, but I've been using it extensively since 2006, and I've been pretty happy with it. It's unlike Log4j. I don't know about Log4Coco now that I think about it, but unlike Log4j, you get debug logging by default, and then you can configure it to tell it to basically shut up. And you do that actually a bunch of different ways. It uses the NS default system, where you can use a defaults write command to set logging statements. You can use command line arguments. That's usually what I use when my debugging. I have so like dash JR log level, and then the class name, and then whether it should be info debug, whatever. So that's sure. That's really handy. And you also can do it. You can basically set kind of a master defaults. In your info.plist inside your app itself. So when you ship, you can... So that's really cool because you can basically turn off your debug statement in your info.plist, but re-enable it in your Xcode arguments. So that way, when you're running the app in Xcode, you're getting the debug SPU you want. But if that binary accidentally slips out to unsuspecting users that aren't developers, you're not going to fill their console.app with your CRUD. It does have... a lot of these logging packages do more than just kind of this log your message like NSLog does. Most of these use macros and use the standard __ file __ and __ line __ type macro compiler macros that use a C preprocessor to inject the current file's line, the current file's line number into all NSLog, all logging statements. And so there's some other ones that there's nowadays __ function __name__. Someone that should take an edit of this episode and just like every time I say underscore, let's run them all together. But there's a lot of underscores there.
That there are. But there are in programming. So
good point. Yes. Now we have like all the underscores with Arc now. That's even more fun.
Yeah.
But so it also will log in additional information, like the function name and the even the instance, like it will log self. and it will also log the, I think it will, it's pretty old, but I think nowadays it will even log the thread backtrace for you. So,
with the each log statement?
Yes.
That's a lot.
But the thing is, keep in mind that these are conditional logs, right? So that NS thread, stack trace, whatever, call is probably pretty expensive, but those aren't actually logged unless you have debugging turned on. So and when you need them, the expensive calls are made, but if you don't, then you can fly. The JR log does support compile time removal that we were talking about before, where you can say, okay, these debug statements in the code just don't, they just disappear totally. That said, I'm not sure if I even ever actually use that feature. I added it to JR log kind of as part of the design spec of what I think a logging system should do, and I've just have gotten totally addicted to leaving my debug logs in the shipping app and letting it all be decided at runtime, because it has saved me so many times when someone in the field with this one unique kind of setup has been having problems. Having those debug statements and info statements, actually being able to invoke those and turn those on has saved me so many times that I don't think I can go back. So I've been pretty much leave those on all the time. If I had to redo JR log, I'd probably not add the compile time removal features.
Addiction is so sad to see.
And interesting thing about JR log, you can tell it's like a 2006 design, because it will shop out, it will vend its logging statements via distributed objects to anyone who wants to subscribe to them. So I have this other app that will listen to them. And so if you don't want to spew your console.app, or if you've shipped the app in a release binary form, and you want to attach to it at a runtime, maybe this one particular class you know the name of, and you want to bump its logging statement to debug, you can do that at runtime, even without like the modifier launch trick. And it's just distributed objects makes that so easy that I just included that, and that's really a shame since distributed objects have pretty much fallen out of favor. I know there's that XPC kind of distributed object disk thing, but I haven't really looked into how hard it would be to kind of port it.
It would certainly be more complicated, I would think.
I would think.
Than distributed objects, yeah. It's not really the same sort of thing at all.
Mm-hmm. And just like you have like NS assert and you have NS C assert, where the C, because NS assert actually will log, I think, self or uses self somehow. But you have NSC assert, which is meant for the plain OC functions that right. Won't use self at all. I have the problem with JR log is that by default it will log the instance that's actually sending the log statement. And that's another thing we'll log is like what thread you're currently on, which is often very helpful. But that could be problematic, obviously, if it's in pure C functions, there's C variants. And it also has even block versions of that. Because I was running into problems when blocks came out where I would have logging statements inside the block and it would use self and it would end up retaining everything.
Retaining the self, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's weak self versions of the macros in there as well. And there's the common thing would be like you have an error, an S error, and you want to and you say, if it's not nil, then I want to log it. And that's such a common idiom that I just created JR log NS error that kind of rolls this in. So you can unconditionally try to log something and the macro will do the condition for you. And then we'll then do the proper JR log error of it, pulling out the error's domain, its code, and its user info all in one blow.
So much for keeping JR log in a low profile. Touting its virtues here. Everyone's going to want to use it now.
I use it basically all my projects. So that's, but again, I'm sure it has, that's the problem with something that you're so familiar with for so long, is that I'm sure there are bodies buried in there that I'm not even aware of, that, this is the way my brain works, and there are projects like I'll write, and then I'll walk away from for a while. I'll come back, and I'll see them with fresh eyes. And actually, I ran into this with auto layout shorthand that I came back to it. And I'm like, what's this about? And I had the beginner's mind on it again. And I was very excited because then I could see the problems with some of the design of it. And so I created a list of things I need to address there. But unfortunately, with JR log, since I use it so extensively, and apparently for 6 years now, 7 years now, that it's just totally one with my brain, so to speak. So there, I'm sure, and it's plus the documentation on it sucks so badly because there is no README and it's all this code. And so it's so hopefully that will scare away some of our listeners. One other hack I have to mention of JR log while we're still talking about it is JR log override NS log. So this is actually a macro that will replace all your occurrences of NS log and return it to JR log infos. So those are logging statements at the info level. And which is kind of weird because the problem is that JR log wants to log self. And you can use NS log. There's no like NSC log version of NS log. It's just NS log everywhere. So you could totally put NS logs in C functions. So the gross hack there is that if you enable that that macro, it will define a global self. And it is be id self equals nil. So define a global self that equals nil, and that pretty much works around like compilation errors type stuff. But it's like I said, it's a gross hack, but it's pretty fun. And finally, I want to talk about Coco Lumberjack. And so it sounds like you've already been doing some research into that.
Yeah, I looked into it for the last podcast, although I didn't get to use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It definitely has a lot of cool stuff with it. I definitely like how it uses a ring buffer to log stuff so that logging is very, very fast. I also like its infrastructure. It has that kind of ability to send its logging statements outside of itself so that you can have another app receive those statements and kind of do that dynamically. And so that's really cool too. I do share some of your problems with it. It looks like that it has like infinite levels, and I don't think it has the ability to do like class based ones where JR log is based, and much like log4j and log4coco, it kind of uses your classes as a unit of deciding whether you should log something or not. So it's really easy to say JR my class turn that off, but this other class turn it on. And this seems to be kind of more at the file level. Which is
I thought I saw that they did it at the class level too.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm just misreading.
There's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah. And this is definitely more modern than my stuff. My stuff I wrote back 2006. This stuff is all modern. He actually has documentation in his, so that's pretty awesome. So his is faster.
Right, he's written up quite a bit of stuff on there.
Yeah. So I would kind of. Starting from scratch type stuff, I would definitely look at Coco Lumberjack first and try make that work, but maybe take a peek at JR log if you don't mind wading through my code. It's not a lot of code, but there's a lot of cool stuff in there, even though it's a bit dated, and I've been keeping up to date just for my use. But starting from scratch, I don't know if I would actually write JR log from scratch now that Coco Lumberjack is out.
Well, sure. One nice thing is from a maintenance standpoint, I mean, if I added in my own classes to do logging at this point, I would really want to keep them to be only what I need. I think for me, maybe it's just a mental thing, but bringing in another framework or another library and say, well, this is our logging library. Well, then it's a little easier for you to say, well, okay, whatever complexity is over there, somebody else wrote that. So I'm going to treat that as something different and not as everything that's in here must be there for a reason. And that makes it a little easier. So, if Lumberjack is a little more complicated, that might be acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I'm glad you mentioned that because that actually reminded me of that second thing I couldn't think of before, where you mentioned the problem with adding these fine-grained logging statements to all your class is quite a development burden. And I agree with that, totally. That the idea of you debug logging every set of every variable is just a tedious garbage. No one should be doing that. It's kind of like those the commenting every line where you're like saying set x to 42. Like yeah, that's what the line of code says. Don't put a comment in there that says that's what it does. So that's the case. But in practicality, you don't do that. Instead, you only add debugging statements for things that seem like they should work but aren't. So it's definitely a demand page type thing where you add even the debug statements to things that aren't working correctly, or basically it's a way of you kind of, again, it's almost like this second layer of code on top of the first layers. Like it's
the, of by the, grit.
Wow, that's actually works really well. And that's from like both the grit of the second level of like dust, but also from like the true grit perspective. But anyway, yeah. So it's like the second level that if I see like a JR log debug statement in there that's like spitting out a variable, then that tells me that at some time I thought that there is called into question whether this variable will be set to what I think it should be set, right?
This is scar tissue,
this is scar tissue.
Evidence of a wound.
Yeah, totally. So,
does that mean, though, does that mean then that if you're trying to get information from what a user is seeing, have there been times when you get that log stuff back, but it doesn't include the information you needed because you weren't logging everything?
Yeah, that's definitely happened. Yeah. There's no panacea here, right?
Nope.
Yeah. But that does it for me. Anything for you?
I don't think so. It's interesting that we're coming at us from such different perspectives. And certainly, it depends on your project. I have had less of a... I wouldn't say less of a need, but certainly less of a capacity to go to users and get this kind of information from them. And if you don't have that capability, then you shouldn't put this kind of stuff in there because mm-hmm. you won't be able to use it. But as I said, we do have the case where we do log this one application that we use. We log sort of all of the network traffic, and that has come in handy, but I kind of think of that as being different because it's kind of more of a cross-platform thing. Mm. But you know, again, if you need something like that, obviously you need it, and you should put it in. And it really isn't very different from what you've been talking about. But I'm still, it would still.
You're like, skeptical. I can tell. But yeah.
Well, and again, I've been fighting this case where there was logorrhea.
Sure.
Which is actually a word, although it doesn't exactly mean what we think it means. And so I'm just so anti that right now that you'd have to really persuade me to do what because like doing what you just said you wanted to do, that's what I've been fighting against.
Yeah.
When there's no ease, because again, it was just debug statements. There was no way for the client to turn it back on. It was just cluttering up my log.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. If there was no way to turn it back on, then I would be siding with you.
Yeah. Alrighty. But since there is, you're not.
Right.
Right. All right. Okay, please visit our website, edgecasesshow.com, all one word, for show notes, a link to our podcast on iTunes, and more. Now I'm laughing because of what we did last episode. Oh, I meant to talk about that.
We can talk about it now.
Just so our users know, that was not my decision to put that in, because I specifically said we weren't going to do that. But yes, it was cute.
Okay, I'll give a call out to because to this day you did not know who produced that. It just appeared randomly in the Bitstream. yes, that little jingle was written by Wayne Wang, and who's an up and coming iOS programmer. He quit his boring corporate Java job, and is now switching to iOS at my recommendation. So, thanks for doing that little jingle, Wayne.
Okay, but am I going to see that showing up this week too?
It's open for debate.
All right, yes, debate it will be. All right, thank you, everybody. See you next time.